Hello, this is TV Guide Magazine for September 16th through 29th. I'm Rachel Renner. We'll get started with Ask Matt. America's top TV critic Matt Rausch answers your burning questions. So the first question is from Ronald, who says, I really enjoyed Instinct, and I'm sorry it has been canceled. What is ironic is that on page 10 of the fall preview issue from September 2nd, its cancellation is noted in For the Record. On page 11, it is tied for number 21 in America's Most Watched Shows. There is some disconnect here. Plus, there are loose ends and new storylines that will never be resolved. Any chance of a wrap-up episode? Matt Rausch responds, We get a lot of mail from those dismayed about this cancellation, and quite a few pointed out the disparity with the ratings chart. Truth is, it's hard to know where the bar is set for summer programming, and ratings for the Alan Cumming, Bohana Novakovic procedural were down from its first year, much of which aired during the regular TV season, when viewership tends to be higher. Unfortunately, it seems unlikely that the show would go back into production for any reason. And those asking whether it could be picked up by another network or streaming service are bound to be disappointed as well. This was an in-house CBS production, and it doesn't appear that the series is being shopped around to new outlets. The second question is from Wilbur, who says, Will the TV series version of Fargo ever return? Matt Rausch responds, You betcha. After a two-year break, the fourth season begins production in Chicago this fall for a 2020 premiere on FX, with Chris Rock leading an impressive cast. The setting? 1950 Kansas City, Missouri, where Italian and African-American crime syndicates clash. Can't wait. In theaters now, Welcome Back to Downton Abbey by Ileana Rudolph. Fans rejoice. The Crawley family and their loyal servants return in a can't-miss movie. Here's everything you have to look forward to. By order of the king, the majestic doors of Downton Abbey are open again. The beloved drama moves from PBS's masterpiece to the big screen in a lavish new film in theaters September 20th that reunites most of its characters last seen on the TV series 2015 finale. It's 1927, and 18 months have passed for the upstairs-downstairs folks, now preparing for a visit from Britain's King George V and Queen Mary during a tour of Yorkshire. No surprise, the royals and their retinue shake up the Crawley family's quiet country manor. We needed a story that would have all the characters involved in one endeavor together, says executive producer Gareth Neame. So we created the biggest event to ever happen at Downton. The arrival of the king, played by Simon Jones, queen, played by Geraldine James, and their entourage, engenders scandal, unexpected romance, and a shocking rebellion. The night before the movie opens, catch up with the cast in Return to Downton Abbey, a grand event, airing Thursday, September 19th at 8, 7 Central on NBC. Even with its sad moments, Downton is a positive and life-affirming place, says Neame. We want people to be delighted to see these characters again. Creator Julian Fellowes teases what they are up to. Lady Mary, played by Michelle Dockery. In the drama's penultimate episode, the eldest Crawley daughter married her second husband, auto racer-turned-car salesman Henry Talbot, played by Matthew Good, whose common-sense attitude seems to have slightly softened Mary's all-too-sharp tongue. Now a mother of two and running the Downton estate with her brother-in-law, Tom Branson, Mary understands how hard that job is, says Fellowes, and she has a crisis. She knows if they sell, everyone could live comfortably, but would that be letting the family down? Lady Edith, played by Laura Carmichael. At series end, Edith, the middle child, had married wealthy Bertie, played by Harry Haddon Payton, to become the Marquess of Hexham, thus outranking her family. He accepted her out-of-wedlock daughter, and she finally called Mary out as a nasty bitch for revealing the child's parentage. Now mostly reconciled with Mary, the former magazine editor wants more from life than a grind of charity benefits. She's frustrated by her role's limitations, and she needs to resolve that, Fellows shares. Violet Crawley, played by Maggie Smith. Happily for fans, the Dowager Countess is still exchanging barbed witticisms with her favorite foil, Isabel, played by Penelope Wilton, the Baroness Merton. Violet's equanimity is threatened by the impending arrival of disavowed cousin Lady Maud Bagshaw, played by Imelda Staunton, the Queen's lady-in-waiting. Violet doesn't believe Maud has carried on the family's dynastic obligations, notes Fellows. Lord Robert and Lady Cora, played by Hugh Bonneville and Elizabeth McGovern. Robert has reached a fairly happy stage where Mary has essentially taken over running Downton, and he's kind of constitutional monarch, says Fellows. It suits him and Cora. As for the royal visit, the Earl of Grantham and his wife are very flattered. Tom Branson, played by Alan Leach. The family's former chauffeur and widower of youngest daughter Sybil, played by Jessica Brown Finley, has been accepted into the Crawley fold and co-manages Downton's tenant farms. The Irish anti-monarchist makes his feelings about the royal family known and gets into some trouble for it, but he is taken with one pretty guest. It seemed nice that any love story in the film would be Tom's, says Fellows. Anna and John Bates, played by Joanne Froggatt and Brendan Coyle. After surviving a rape, false murder accusations, and a prison term between them, the star-crossed couple are devotedly raising their son, now almost two. In her continuing role as Mary's lady's maid and his as Robert's valet, they spearhead the staff's actions against the entitled and nasty visiting servants who believe themselves superior and threaten to take over their house. Anna has always fought her corner, Fellows emphasizes. She's never been a weak woman. Charles Carson and Elsie Hughes, played by Jim Carter and Phyllis Logan. The final season brought happiness, Downton's gruff butler and compassionate head housekeeper Wed, and sadness when Carson was forced to resign due to tremors in his hands. A fan of the monarchy, he may be the most excited by the royal visit, says Fellows. So it's fitting that Mary asks Carson to temporarily resume his old job during the important event. But how will he react when his wife gets involved in the servants' plots against the royal household staff? Thomas Barrow, played by Robert James Collier. Life had become hard and lonely for Thomas, a gay man at a time when homosexuality was a crime, says Fellows. His scheming nature only added to his discontent, and at one point he even attempted suicide. He ended the TV series in a happier place, promoted to butler when Carson retired. After his predecessor is reinstated, Thomas takes a night off and gets dangerously reckless. But he finally makes a promising personal connection. Beryl Patmore and Daisy Mason, played by Leslie Nichol and Sophie McShera. Downton's strict but caring cook still hasn't retired to fulfill her dream of running a bed and breakfast. But Mrs. Patmore has plenty to be excited about, not just feeding the king and queen, but also planning the wedding feast for her assistant, Daisy, and footman-slash-farmer Andy Parker, played by Michael Fox. But Daisy, who years earlier married a man she didn't love, he was on his deathbed, is now questioning her choice of husband. She wants to marry someone who's prepared to fight for what he wants, says Fellows. Is mild-mannered Andy up to the task? Criminal Behavior by Damien Holbrook. 2020. Season premiere Friday, September 27th at 9, 8 Central on ABC. Having transitioned from the standard news magazine to a two-hour documentary-style format, the venerated 2020, now in its 42nd season, is leaning even further into viewers' fascination with factual malfeasance. True crime satiates this need we all have to figure out who did something, why they did it, and how it can possibly be prevented, says co-anchor Amy Robach. Hollywood scripts often pale in comparison to real life, and truth is often stranger than fiction. Fittingly, the season opens with an exclusive interview from the entertainment world. Las Vegas icons Siegfried and Roy weigh in on recent allegations of human error surrounding the 2003 Tiger attack that ended their stage show. But don't expect 2020's take to be tabloidy. Everyone who trusts us to tell their story, oftentimes about the absolute worst thing that's ever happened to them, deserves respect and journalistic integrity, Roback adds. Indeed, it's that dedication to getting the facts straight that has benefited the most from expanded episodes. These two-hour programs have allowed our team to take often much-needed deeper dives, explains co-anchor David Muir. I always say, no matter how dark a story may be, there must be something we can all learn from it. Coming up, he says, a profoundly moving interview with Peyton Lutner, the girl stabbed 19 times in 2014 by two friends who wanted to impress the fictional Slender Man character, and a look at healthcare injustices in rural America. Muir believes the investigations make an impact not because of the horrifying acts they detail, but because of the humans who endure and overcome. Their stories can get lost in the political noise of our time, he says. I hope we are able to break through that noise and give these people the voice they deserve. Prodigal Son, series premiere Monday, September 23rd at 9/8 Central on Fox. The Silence of the Lambs meets family dysfunction in this unsettling new thriller. Brainy criminal psychologist Malcolm Bright, played by The Walking Dead's Tom Payne, may have inherited a knack for solving murders, perhaps a bit of madness, too, from his equally brilliant father, played by Michael Sheen, a notorious serial killer dubbed The Surgeon. We'll see what else the two have in common when a copycat's brutal homicides bring the still-traumatized Bright face-to-face with his imprisoned dad for the first time in 10 years. Now in returning favorites, Winning Team, Ziva David is back from the dead to save her old boss Gibbs on NCIS, and the reunited Mark Harmon and Cody DiPablo couldn't be happier. By Kate Hahn. That's September 24th, 8/7 Central on CBS. The last time Cody DiPablo and Mark Harmon paired up for a TV Guide magazine cover shoot in 2009, it ended with a food fight and her face smushed into a cake. The mood is more serious this August day when we go back to the NCIS set in Valencia, California, to mark the momentous return of her character, Ziva David. The tough, smart Mossad operative turned NCIS agent was presumed killed by an explosion in 2016. DiPablo had already left in 2013. Then Ziva made a surprise appearance in May's finale to warn her former boss, Supervisory Special Agent Leroy Jethro Gibbs, played by Harmon, that his life was in danger. With shooting for season 17 underway, Harmon sports a nasty stage makeup scratch on his forehead, while DiPablo is in a closed set to do a fight scene. Her character is a martial arts expert. Together, for our photographer later, and minus any visible signs of an altercation, they have the same easy rapport we see on screen. He whispers in her ear, she laughs and leans her head on his shoulder. I don't think we'd be here if we weren't friends off camera, she notes. Afterward, we sit down with the co-stars to talk about the staggeringly popular drama's upcoming season and how it feels to be reunited. Han says, in the trailer, Ziva mentions a woman named Sahar, played by Muzan Makar, who wants her dead and is now after Gibbs. How dangerous will it get? Mark Harmon says, the threat is real. Cody DiPablo says, we are very much in danger. The only way to justify Ziva possibly breaking cover and jeopardizing herself and the people at NCIS was to make the threat absolutely real. She lost her father, Mossad director Eli David, killed in season 10, so she feels responsible for her father figure, Gibbs, and has to save him. She's also trying to keep her daughter a secret and safe from the people who are trying to get Gibbs. She's also trying to keep her daughter a secret and safe from the people who are trying to get to Gibbs and to her. Tali has been living in Paris with her former NCIS agent father, Tony DiNozzo, played by Michael Weatherly. Han says, "Fans just love Tony and Ziva, or Tiva. Any chance we'll see Tony again?" Harmon laughs. "Maybe. Michael is a little busy at the moment." DePablo says, "He's shooting a procedural, Bull. I don't think Ziva and Tony have seen each other or communicated in a long time. Tali was delivered to him by Mossad, and that was the end of it. Don't ask any questions, ... To be continued." Han says, "Based on what we've seen on set today, is it safe to say the premiere is pretty action-packed?" Harmon says, "We and other cast members are in scuffles. It's very active. Ziva and Gibbs have different ideas for how to go from point A to point B. The driving is contested." DePablo says, "Gibbs takes the keys." She laughs. "In the fight sequences, I was a little rusty, but you start working on something and go, 'Oh, that's right, I really like this.' The choreography comes back into your body incredibly quickly. It's fun." Han asks, "With Ziva taking the lead because of her intel, are their typical father-daughter roles reversed?" DePablo says, "It's not a given that they're going to be exactly who they were. We have different ideas pretty much the entire episode. Ziva is used to working by herself, and all of a sudden she's trying to tell Gibbs what to do. They haven't seen each other for a long time and have to find trust again." Harmon says, "Cody in some ways plays a very different character. Ziva is older, more experienced. She's been on her own for a long time. Gibbs is not accustomed to change, and they already threw a lot of change at him last season." Han asks, "As actors, did you experience the same type of readjustment?" DePablo says, "It's like time never passed. We get right into the groove. It's very easy to look at Mark and understand emotionally where you're going in a scene. Gibbs and Ziva are on edge, and the stakes are very high, so they're in combustible situations. Mark and I play with that. What am I calling you on? How are you going to react to me? Are we going to go head to head? Mark always helps me react." Han says, "Speaking of your working relationship, Gibbs whispered something to Ziva in season 7 when she returned after a traumatic departure. Fans have always wondered, what did he say?" Harmon says, "You're not getting this from me. It's not so much a secret, but an actor thing." DePablo says, "Mark does that all the time. He'll whisper in your ear right before a take or talk to you about stuff you don't want to talk about. And then afterward he'll go, 'Oh, by the way, I was just doing that so we can get a take.' I'm like, 'Oh, you little—'" Harmon says, "When you know people well and you know how they work, it comes from respect. It's not about manipulation. I know how she rolls, and she knows me the same way." Han asks, "Do you remember your first day together on set in season 3? Harmon says, "I remember so clearly when Cody first got here. We were working long hours. She just brought it. She was all in. The cargo pants, the headband, the—" DePablo says, "combat boots. My first year, 2005, I was a little discombobulated. I was so new. Mark knew instantly when a scene was working. He'd say, 'Oh, this is cool. Let's grab this.'" Han says, "You've shared many memorable scenes. When Ziva showed up at the top of Gibbs's basement stairs, it echoed a dramatic one from season 3. She stood in the same spot and saved Gibbs's life by killing her half-brother, Ari Haswari, a Mossad double agent and terrorist who was about to shoot. Is this new danger related to the past?" DePablo says, "Ari's always involved. There's something that has to do with him and some loose ends still lingering. You see some of Ziva's past come back, flashbacks and hints of things that have marked her in the years she's been gone." Harmon says, "And we'll see other characters you've met in both Gibbs's and Ziva's lives." Han asks, How does the rest of the NCIS team react to the stunning news that Ziva is back? Harmon says, "For the premiere, we've been isolated in some ways. We've seen a lot of each other." DePablo says, "Episode 2, there is more interaction, mostly with McGee, Sean Murray's special agent, and a little with NCIS medical examiner turned historian Ducky, played by David McCollum. Then Ziva meets Bishop, played by Emily Wickersham as another special agent, who basically knows Ziva from reading her diary. Bishop discovered Ziva's hideaway in February's She. Ziva knows very little about Bishop. They check each other out, see how they feel." Han asks, "How did the cast react to having you back, Cody?" DePablo says, "The table read was great. I hadn't seen Sean in a long time, or Brian Dietzen, who plays Ducky's successor Jimmy, or Rocky Carroll, who plays Boss Vance. But it was also really great to meet the new people, like Maria Bello, who plays Jack, another special agent, Emily and Wilmer Valderrama, who plays team member Nick. When I saw Wilmer, immediately we started speaking Spanish." Harmon says, "She and Diana Reisenover, a.k.a. forensic scientist Casey, hit it off right away." DePablo says, "She's fantastic, so smart and witty." Han says, "We know Ziva appears in 2 episodes now, but will return later in the season. Does unfinished business remain between her and Gibbs?" DePablo says, "Yes, a lot is still at stake with the secret Ziva is keeping, meaning where her daughter and Tony are." Harmon says, "And who else knows that secret? People's lives depend on it." DePablo says, "Who's still after her and who's still after Gibbs, or is someone still after him? These characters have a strong bond. The episodes reveal some secrets and show what they are willing to do for each other." And now for tribute. Valerie Harper, 1939 to 2019, by Matt Rausch. "It's hard to remember a time when we weren't rooting for Valerie Harper. It began in the 70s when she played wisecracking Rhoda Morgenstern, the brash and brassy sidekick to winsome Mary Richards in the first 4 seasons of the legendary Mary Tyler Moore Show. We already knew we loved Mary, but we quickly came to worship Rhoda for her feisty and self-deprecating wit. This beacon of independent feminism won us over the moment she considered a piece of candy and quipped, 'I don't know why I'm putting this in my mouth. I should just apply it directly to my hips.' Who was she kidding? Rhoda was a catch, the kind of fearlessly funny friend anyone would be lucky to have. And Harper, who died August 30th at 80 after a long battle with cancer, was an instant TV star. She won 4 Emmys as Rhoda, 3 as supporting actress and 1 as lead in the Rhoda spinoff, which sent the character back to New York and into a whirlwind romance with a guy called Joe, played by David Groh. Their wedding was a ratings blockbuster, and while the marriage eventually fell apart, Rhoda and Harper maintained her scrappy appeal. For a generation of women who came of age in the social revolutions of that era, Rhoda was a hero. She was a real woman. She cracked jokes to cover her fears and insecurities," Harper wrote in a 2001 book. "She was just like you and me." And while Harper's TV career was not without blemish, she was fired from an 80s sitcom that bore her name after an embarrassing contract dispute. The show went on, erasing Valerie from its title. The actress once again emerged as a role model when she went public with her crusade against terminal brain cancer in 2013. Mere months after her diagnosis, she bravely tempted fate and thrilled her fans by joining the cast of the grueling competition Dancing with the Stars. She may not have won the trophy, but once again Harper earned our respect and admiration with her pluck, charm, and drive. "That's one reason I act. I'm saying, 'Look at me,'" she told TV Guide magazine in 1974 during her Rhoda heyday. "I have a need to be looked at." And we never tired of looking and cheering her on, including in a 2000 Mary and Rhoda TV movie reunion with Moore, who died in 2017. They appeared together one last time with fellow Mary Tyler Moore Show stars Betty White, Cloris Leachman, and the late Georgia Engel on a 2013 episode of Hot in Cleveland. Well played, Valerie. Retro returns. Fall delivers some new offerings in the oldie but goodie department. In fact, this first title is so old it goes all the way back to the Stone Age. Prehistory repeats itself when the animation classic The Flintstones re-airs 59 years to the day after its debut, on weekdays starting September 30th at 6, 5 Central on MeTV. The hijinks of Fred and Wilma Flintstone and neighbors-slash-best friends Barney and Betty Rubble range from sitcom silly, a winning sweepstakes ticket goes missing, to yabba-dabba-doozies, a Rear Window spoof. But our favorite thing about the 1960-66 tune was the clever way it reimagined day-to-day living for the dinosaur era. You can't not smile at a woolly mammoth vacuum cleaner, a sundial wristwatch, or a sawfish used as a kitchen knife. For something completely different, settle in with the uplifting Highway to Heaven, weekdays starting October 7th at 3, 2 Central on Cozy TV. Michael Landon stars in the 1984-89 drama as an angel on earth helping people in need. If you're a God Friended Me fan, this one's for you. By April P. Bernard. Bull, September 23rd at 10, 9 Central on CBS. Still reeling from the shocker that Dr. Jason Bull, played by Michael Weatherly, is going to be a dad? So is he. Season 4 of the courtroom drama begins roughly 4 months after the master trial consultant learned his remarried ex-wife Izzy, played by Yara Martinez, is expecting his child following their tryst. The premiere digs into Bull's feelings on fatherhood, which become more complicated as the due date approaches, showrunner Glenn Gordon Caron says, and where his relationship stands with former brother-in-law Benny, played by Freddie Rodriguez, who busted his boss's lip and threatened to leave their firm after hearing of the affair. Did the baby news bring Benny back into the fold? Assume nothing, Caron says, but he adds that the opener is all about Benny and Bull. Well, that and a bartender accused of involuntary manslaughter. A later episode focuses on the birth of trial science based on a true story. It takes place in the 70s, Caron says, and so does the episode. Groovy. By Mandy Beerley. And that's all for today. I'm Rachel Renner.